This article appeared in the summer 2009 issue of UU World magazine and is available online at uuworld.org. One Tribe, One People. Unitarian Universalism is growing rapidly in Africa, uniting people from many tribes to serve the poor. Text and photographs by Scott Kraft. The four-wheel drive Toyota carrying the Reverend Patrick Magara, his wife Alice, and me had left the paved road an hour ago, and now it was winding through the verdant hills of western Kenya, passing town after remote town. As the afternoon sun ducked toward the horizon, casting ever longer shadows, the vehicle took a right turn and squeezed up an even narrower rutted track flanked by thick, wild shrubbery. Reaching a plateau, it turned onto an open field and stopped near 4 dozen people gathered on wood benches beneath an acacia tree. As we approached, we heard voices welcoming us in song. "Unitarianism is echoing," the choir director, 18-year-old Esther Biyaki, sang in Kisi, the local language. The congregation responded, "Echoing all over the world." "Unitarianism is echoing," she sang again, came the reply, "echoing in Kenya, where everyone wants to join." As the congregants sang, the local pastor, Joseph Nyengau, a rail-thin man of 45, reached out his hand to welcome Magara, who oversees several dozen Unitarian Universalist congregations in this remote part of Kenya. Nyengau, who farms maize and tomatoes here, has been the pastor in Kiabugesi for 4 years. In that time, he has built his congregation from 5 people to 50 on an average Sunday. Most are impoverished subsistence farmers. They are drawn together by the spirit of Unitarianism, which they regard as a theological breath of fresh air. "We stand as a family of love, peace, unity, and justice," Nyengau said. "We take the Bible literally, but we only believe in one God. Others talk about three gods, but we talk about one God. And Unitarianism teaches us about that God." In his sermons, Nyengau takes a passage of Scripture and interprets it line by line. "We don't want to be charismatic," he explained. "We try to teach them to think for themselves, not to be excited by somebody else." Added Magara, "We honor the Old Testament writings. We imagine Jesus as our brother, and we are all sons of God." I traveled to Kenya in November 2008 on assignment for UU World to report on Unitarian Universalism's rapid growth in Africa. 10 years ago, the continent counted only a handful of UU congregations, 4 in South Africa, where Unitarianism was introduced in 1857, and 2 in Nigeria, where a Unitarian church was founded in 1919. Recently, congregations have emerged in places such as Kampala, Uganda, Bujumbura, Burundi, and Brazzaville, Republic of the Congo. But the most spectacular growth has occurred in Kenya, where local leaders say 68 congregations have sprouted in the Kisii province, a 6-hour drive west of Nairobi. Several dozen more have emerged in Nairobi and central Kenya. Christianity is booming in Africa. Its presence here has been nurtured by foreign missionaries who have assiduously planted congregations as part of a theological imperative to spread the faith. Today, small billboards on Kenya's roadways advertise the schools and churches of Seventh-day Adventists, Presbyterians, and Roman Catholics. Unitarian Universalists do not have that tradition of proselytizing mission work, but UU principles have made their way into Africa nonetheless. On a continent where internet access is growing quickly, people in remote areas are discovering Unitarianism in Google-powered spiritual journeys. The highlands of Kisii District in western Kenya, where Unitarian Universalism has grown with determined fury, are blessed with heavenly beauty. This is the heart of tea country, and fields of Kenya's finest export cascade down hills that soar up to 7,000 feet, shimmering like multi-hued green silk carpets. Kisii is home to 2 million people, 90% of whom live far from paved roads. Most are ethnic Kisii's, and although Swahili is the official language of Kenya, most people here speak Kisii in their day-to-day life. Patrick Magara was born in these hills, the son of a local chief. Until about a decade ago, Magara was the pastor of the Grace Covenant Adventist Church and the spiritual leader of a group of 24 Seventh-day Adventist churches. He was also General Secretary of the East African Christian Alliance, an association of Bible-believing churches of several denominations. In 1999, the Alliance sponsored him as a student at a non-denominational seminary in Philadelphia, where he studied for 2 years. During his sojourn in the United States, Magara struck up a friendship with a Unitarian Universalist he met in a grocery store. His new friend told him about Unitarianism, and Magara was intrigued by the description of a church where there was true freedom of worship. Magara was ripe for conversion. "I was questioning things," he recalled. "I was surprised that even my own church leaders treated Africans like children, and I was finding some weaknesses in my Christian beliefs. The idea that God was in each one of us was appealing." When he returned to Kenya, Magara lost touch with his American friend, but he researched Unitarian Universalism on the Internet, using a computer at the local post office. He soon decided to convert and delivered the news first to his colleagues in the Christian Alliance, who were deeply skeptical. "I told them that we have to respect all religions," he recalled. "The true doctrine is to respect everyone, no matter how they worship God." Magara then announced his decision to his fellow pastors in southern Kisii and urged them to join him. They did. "He told me there are now 68 UU congregations in this region with several thousand members. His estimates are impossible to verify, but visits by international UU officials suggest that he has at least several dozen congregations with a total membership of well over 500. In addition, the churches have started preschools, schools, and an orphanage that cater to hundreds of children." Magara, a slightly built, impish man of 63, still lives in his hometown of Sengera, a village of 1,500, a half-hour's drive south of the city of Kisii. He and his wife Alice live in a two-bedroom house near the center of Sengera. Although the house is wired for electricity, the Magaras say they cannot afford to be connected. A computer donated by an American UU sits idle in one of their bedrooms. Alice Magara, a strong-willed woman of 45, leads her own UU congregation. She is a driving force in her husband's efforts to increase UU membership and to create new UU-run businesses to pay for schools, provide aid for widows and orphans, and build new churches. Patrick Magara took a pre-breakfast stroll around town, dressed, as usual, in a double-breasted suit, a formality favored by Kenyan men of his generation, and his pastoral collar. As he walked, adults and children greeted him cheerily, calling him Bishop. A sign advertised the Free Presbyterian Church of Scotland's 2 Sunday services, run by a Scottish missionary. "They have a colonial mentality," Magara said. "No African is allowed to lead their services." A few blocks from his home, Magara stopped at another house he owns, this one occupied by his other wife, with whom he has 7 children. Teresa Magara, 54, lives with their widowed daughter and her 5 children, all of whom Megara supports. One of his sons by Teresa, Justin, oversees a second group of UU congregations in Kisi District. After a short visit, Teresa asked Megara to lead a prayer, and he obliged. As he left, he gave her a 50-shilling note, about 60 U.S. cents. Unitarians in Kisi condone multiple marriage, which is part of Kisi culture. That stance sets them apart from other denominations in Kenya which discourage the practice. Isaac Choti, who runs a Unitarian-sponsored elementary school in a nearby village, has two wives, both of whom are teachers at the school. "I had been a Christian all my life," Choti said, "but my church had policies I didn't like. Some churches make it hard for us. They say you can only come with one wife, but Jesus said come as you are. In UU, they welcome everyone." In other important ways, Kisi Unitarians embrace a progressive view of the role of women in society. For example, the churches take an activist position against domestic violence, which is a particular problem in Kisi, where women often are saddled with much of the heavy farming work, while husbands idle away their days smoking and talking with friends. Female circumcision also remains a common practice, but the Megaras, and most Unitarians here, preach against it. "The reason I like Unitarianism so much is that it allows us to be free to do our own things, free even to tell the government that they have made a mistake," Alice Megara said. "As Unitarians, we fight for human rights. We teach against female circumcision, though people still do it secretly because it is a Kisi cultural thing." Over the course of 2 days, the Megaras took me to a dozen of their Kisi congregations, and hundreds of UU members, alerted by cell phone, were waiting for us. Several of the congregations had prepared detailed written proposals requesting donations of hundreds of dollars to pay for new churches, medical clinics, schools, grain mills, and orphanages. The Kenyan congregations have received some donations in recent years from individuals, the most prominent of whom is Arizona UU Janice Brunson. Brunson has made several trips to Kenya and has traveled across the United States to talk about UUs in Africa and encourage American UUs to make donations to their brothers and sisters in Kenya. "I visited a field of 5-foot stalks of maize grown from seeds Brunson donated. The local UU leaders plan to use the proceeds from that harvest to build ovens for a new brick-making factory then under construction. Church leaders said they would use the proceeds from the brick factory to help pay salaries for teachers at a local UU primary school. When I first started, I wasn't sure what I was even doing," Brunson said in a phone interview. The economic distress of UU members in Africa was great, but she said it was clear that just pouring money into schools and clinics wasn't the answer. Eventually, she decided that the best way to help was to support business efforts that would benefit a large group of people. Brunson's efforts in Africa have highlighted a difficult question for American Unitarian Universalists. How do you set up a fruitful relationship with UU groups in Africa without making them dependent on a stream of funding from overseas? Many churches in the United States, seeking to win converts, provide direct support to missionaries and pay for schools and other social work. But that kind of charity work is often a one-way street that, development experts say, can create a paternal relationship that makes the recipients dependent on foreign aid. That's the reason, according to the Reverend Eric Cherry, Director of International Resources for the Unitarian Universalist Association, that the UUA has not donated money directly to UU churches in Kenya. Instead, the UUA has been trying to create a mutually beneficial spiritual relationship. "We're thrilled that people in Kenya think that Unitarian Universalism fits them, and that it's a religion they want to promote," Cherry said. but traditional missionary work is not something that the UUA wants to do. We operate more on a partnership model. While I was in Kenya in November 2008, a UUA delegation that included Cherry and UUA President William G. Sinkford visited Unitarian Universalists in South Africa, Uganda, Kenya, and Nigeria. It was, as Sinkford put it, an antidote to parochialism. We were instructed by the wonderful reality that folks here are creating an African Unitarian Universalism which will be different in many ways from American Unitarian Universalism, Sinkford said during his stopover in Nairobi. The essence of Unitarian Universalism is its open-heartedness. The journey, Sinkford said, also has helped me understand that in a context where poverty is extreme, managing a Unitarian Universalist church that does not address that poverty is simply impossible. The collection taken by the congregation in Kia Bugesi rarely amounts to more than a few shillings, pennies in U.S. currency. Pastor Niangao gives that money to the neediest in the congregation. The Kia Bugesi congregation also runs a preschool with a volunteer member of the church teaching 30 children by candlelight in a one-room hut. The congregation has planted a small field of maize, and it hopes to use the proceeds to complete a medical clinic next to the field. Work on the clinic has been halted for now, and its cinderblock frame was overgrown with tall weeds. Once the clinic is finished, Niangao said, he hopes to find a doctor willing to make occasional visits. There are many people who need a doctor, but don't have the money to go into town, he said. The nearest clinic is 40 miles away in Kisi Town. Not far from Kia Bugesi, the members of the Maribo Women's Group were gathered in the home of its founder, Jane Okanuri, 35. The women run an orphanage for 14 children. They recently borrowed $500 to buy 2 cows. They sell the milk to local residents to pay for the orphanage's expenses, and they take turns caring for the children. Okanuri said the group's mission is to help the poor, though what she didn't say is that the group members themselves are living hand to mouth. She said things are looking up, though, because electricity is coming soon. Okanuri used to belong to another church, but she became interested in Unitarian Universalism because I felt it was a church with freedom, a church that wasn't always pounding people. We found that Unitarians defend women very much, she added. We have a problem in Kenya, and we are determined to change a system where a pregnant woman has to carry sticks on her head, push a wheelbarrow, or work in the field while the men sit around. Unitarianism teaches our husbands that we are equal. Those other churches tell us we must obey. Elsewhere in Kisi District, the Magaras run Sarah's Orphanage, a school with 11 teachers and 620 pupils in a 4-room schoolhouse. The children live in the surrounding villages, but the Magaras dream of building a boarding school and hospital. There are very many children in government school classes, said Ibrahim Ontiri, the headmaster of Sarah's Orphanage, but they are not raised in the UU faith. His pupils spend 30 minutes each day talking about Unitarian Universalism, reading the Bible, and singing. Their brick school has a corrugated roof. When it rains, we just have to stop because it's too loud, one teacher explained, and open holes in the walls that function as windows. Teachers tend a field of maize to provide food for the children. Mostly, we work without payment, said Margaret Gekonge, who teaches English and Swahili. But we do it because we love these children, and we pity them. A few miles further south, down a road that winds past a swollen, chocolate-covered river and tin roofs twinkling on the hillside like sequins, the UU congregation of Mlimani has started to implement some of its ambitious plans. Started in 2005, the 60-member congregation operates a nursery school for 160 pupils and an orphanage that houses 75 of those children. UU's in Mlimani raise money by running a beekeeping operation, a carpentry shop, and a dressmaking store. They borrowed money to buy a mill to grind maize into flour, but the mill only makes about $3 a day, barely enough to service the loan. Pastor Nathan O'Reary said his church provides food, clothing, and medical services for the orphans as well as children living with HIV/AIDS. He is seeking about $800 to build a permanent church, hospital, polytechnic school, seminary, and additional dormitories for the orphanage in Mlimani. He also hopes to launch a poultry project. O'Reary attributed the church's rapid growth in its small community to its civic involvement and the appeal of UU principles. "With Unitarian Universalism, there are no rules," he said. "It is easier than other churches." About 160 miles east of Kisii District, near the capital Nairobi, another cluster of Unitarian Universalist congregations formed independently several years ago. Unlike the mostly poor, ethnically homogeneous groups in Kisii, these congregations represent the broad diversity of Kenya's tribes and its socio-economic landscape. A dozen congregations in the Rift Valley are comprised primarily of Samburu and Maasai, two tribes of tall cattle herders known for their colorful print wraparound clothing and ornate beadwork. A dozen other UU groups, including members of various Kenyan tribes, are scattered on the mile-high equatorial plateau of central Kenya that stretches from Nairobi north to the summit of Mount Kenya. Jackson Longolo, a tall Samburu elder who leads one of the Rift Valley congregations, said Unitarian Universalism has struck a chord with the herders. "Unitarian Universalism helps them feel more civilized," he said. "In Kenya today, there is a lot of competition among churches, and people want to go where their needs are met." Tribal identity is a strong force in Kenya's political landscape. A disputed election between politicians from Kenya's two largest tribes, the Kikuyu and Luo, touched off several weeks of tribal fighting in late 2007 and early 2008 that left 800 dead and hundreds of thousands displaced. Unitarian Universalist leaders in central Kenya, especially in multi-ethnic urban areas like Nairobi, have used UU teachings to stress the need for congregations to welcome all ethnic groups into their membership. Last year, as part of that effort, the two UU organizations in Kenya, Magara's Unitarian Universalist Council of Kenya, UUCK, in Kisii, and the Kenya Unitarian Universalist Council, KUUC, in central Kenya, agreed to work together under the umbrella of the KUUC. "Our goal is one day, one tribe, one people," said John K. Mbugwa, a Kikuyu who is director of UU congregations in central Kenya. Mbugwa, a psychological counselor, was a Presbyterian who converted to Unitarian Universalism when a friend described its principle of equality and inclusiveness. "I had never heard of Unitarian Universalism, but when he told me that it was a faith where everybody was equal in the eyes of God, I was blown away," he said. "It broke my heart. Even Hindus, Buddhists, traditional faiths, all are equal. Now we are all brought together by faith." Mbugwa's wife, Eliza Niambura, said she stresses that message of inclusion in the congregation of 70 members that she oversees north of Nairobi. "What we tell them is that if you become a UU, there is no difference between a Kikuyu, a Maasai, or a Luo," she said. "They are all the same in the eyes of God. that message really resonates with people. The social issues that bring many UUs together in the United States take a back seat for most Kenyan UUs. While domestic violence and women's rights are important to Kenyan UUs, most of them are opposed to abortion and homosexuality. In fact, some Kenyan UU leaders joined a recent protest against abortion in front of Kenya's parliament. We promote positive practices like unity, peace, love, and the care of others, said Justin Magara, Patrick Magara's son and a KUUC director. But we discourage people from homosexuality, alcohol, rape, and incest. Homosexuality is not all that common in Africa anyway. It's something we feel has been introduced by Western influences. But we do have a problem in Kenya with domestic violence. A church recently launched by Mark Kiyimba in Kampala, Uganda, however, has an active lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender group in a country where homosexuality is against the law, and its congregants are mostly middle-class professionals. His congregation runs an orphanage and school for more than 200 children who have HIV/AIDS or who have lost one or both parents to the disease. About 60 UUs from throughout Kenya came together for a Sunday service in a Comfort Inn in Nairobi in November to welcome the American delegation that included President Sinkford, his wife Maria, Eric Cherry, and Paula Cole Jones of the UUA's Just Change consultancy program. Umbugwa, Patrick Magara, and Alice Magara led the service from behind a rectangular table decorated with a yellow cloth with a flaming chalice logo. Alice Magara began the service by lighting a white candle. Patrick Magara preached a sermon in English and Swahili. Delegations from a half dozen congregations performed songs for the group before the service ended with the Lord's Prayer. Ben Macharia, 44, chairman of the KUUC and a former Roman Catholic, described the phenomenal growth of Unitarian Universalism in Kenya and its efforts to reach across tribal and socioeconomic barriers. "We are working together, despite our differences," he told the UUA delegation. But, he added, UUs in Kenya face a number of financial challenges, and he said he hoped that new relationships with American UUs would help the organization grow. Addressing the group, Sinkford said, "What I have heard this morning are stories that are so similar to what I hear in the United States. People coming up to me saying that they never thought they'd find a church like this, where people from different ethnic groups and tribal backgrounds and socioeconomic status and religious traditions can come together and worship as one people. Unitarian Universalism is a faith without borders, and I can promise you that this is a relationship that will go on and on and on." The road north from Nairobi climbs gently toward Ruiru, a city of 200,000 surrounded by coffee plantations. Well off the paved roads, at the end of a rutted track, Elizani Ambura operates a preschool sponsored by her UU church. About 80 barefoot children, wearing identical maroon sweaters as their school uniform, gather in one of two rooms for daily lessons in math, language, and UU principles. During recess, they roll old tires around on the dirt yard. One-fourth of the children, Niambura said, have HIV/AIDS, and most of the others are the sons or daughters of parents with HIV/AIDS who live in the neighborhood. Some of the children's parents work as coffee pickers. Most of the rest are unemployed. "We have to feed them every day, because this is often their only meal," Niambura said. One of the two schoolrooms functions as the kitchen, and the teachers take turns preparing porridge on the dirt floor over a wood fire. "The teachers are like volunteers, mostly, but every few months we have enough to pay them," she said. The school survives on about $50 a month, which comes from donations, the proceeds from a posho mill, and the collection plate at area UU churches. The Central Kenya UU churches also operate a vocational training school for teenagers where they learn welding and other skills. The preschool is one of eight overseen by Niambura's husband, John Mbugwa, and Ben Maturia, the KUUC chairman, who is also a social worker. The schools are part of the Ruiru Children's Support Program, which the men launched 3 years ago to help children whose families have been touched by the HIV/AIDS epidemic. When the pair converted to Unitarian Universalism 2 years ago, they made the schools part of the UU mission. The congregations in central Kenya, unlike those in Kisii and the Rift Valley, include many middle-class professionals, including doctors, nurses, and government workers. But few of them have church buildings. Most meet in a local coffee shop or a member's home. There's a real need across Kenya, they say, for Unitarian Universalist material to be translated into the local languages. We want to get the message to the people, and material in their language is the strongest entry point, Maturia said. But we don't have the budget to be truly effective and let people know we exist. Maturia and other Kenyan UU leaders have reached out to international UU groups, hoping to bring more UU leadership training to the country. Cherry said the UUA is excited by the growth of Unitarian Universalism across Africa, and it envisions even more growth and more cross-cultural exchanges in the future. Unitarian Universalism really does have a saving message that is unique from any other religion in the world, Cherry said, as he sipped tea in downtown Nairobi. The more interesting question sometimes is why Unitarian Universalism hasn't grown even more quickly on this continent. Technology, particularly the Internet, is making it harder and harder for our religion to be hidden under a bushel, and that is a great blessing. Like other UU leaders here, Ben Maturia thinks Unitarian Universalism is an unstoppable force in Kenya. There's been a silent rebellion toward Christianity here, Maturia said. People have yearned quietly for a liberal religion, an open-minded religion. Now there is a choice, and they feel welcome. That is the conversation. You can feel it. That is the driving force. Scott Kraft traveled to Kenya for UU World in November 2008 to report on the explosive growth of Unitarian Universalism in that country. Kraft, the national editor for the Los Angeles Times from 1997 to 2008, is now a senior writer for national and foreign news at the paper. He was the newspaper's bureau chief in Nairobi, Kenya, from 1986 to 1988, and in Johannesburg, South Africa, from 1988 to 1993. Learn more. There are now Unitarian Universalist congregations in Burundi, Congo, Kenya, Nigeria, South Africa, and Uganda. Visit UUWorld.org for links to a variety of resources, including reports, photos, and video from UUA President William G. Sinkford's November 2008 visit to Africa, information about the various UU groups in Africa, and an expanded photo gallery of Kenyan UUs at flickr.com/UUWorld. A public witness. President William G. Sinkford looks back on 8 years of leadership. By Christopher L. Walton. Photographs by Nancy Pierce. The Reverend William G. Sinkford completes his second and final term as president of the Unitarian Universalist Association at the General Assembly in June 2009. UU World sat down with him in March to talk about his 8-year administration. UU World. When you were elected in 2001, you said, "We live in a world of hurt, and we, Unitarian Universalists, have a healing message. It is our job, and it will be my job as our new president, to make this healing voice heard far and wide. How have you brought Unitarian Universalism's healing voice to the wider world during your presidency? Sinkford. I think the first decision that I made as president was to expand our Washington office for advocacy and witness, increasing the number of staff through what we now call the Legislative Intern Program, and also committing that I would be in Washington monthly. So I had the opportunity, with the support of an expanded staff in Washington, to be very present on a range of issues in the nation's capital. I should say that the young adults who staff the Washington office have performed brilliantly. One of the things that I learned was that although the national news tends to focus on graybeards like myself in Washington, Washington is actually run by people who are 25 to 30. It's just been a pleasure to work with them. UU World. What public witness or public visibility initiatives are you most proud of during your presidency? Sinkford. Marriage equality would be right at the top of the list. Our witness there is both deeply grounded, and our congregations have been doing the work of welcoming BGLT, bisexual, gay, lesbian, and transgender folks, for decades. Although there was a setback in California on November 4th, the UU Legislative Ministry was acknowledged as the most effective religious advocacy group working to maintain marriage equality in California. I was surprised, actually, at how effective the 2005 virtual march against global warming was. The issue of concern for the environment runs deep in our theology, but we were remarkably successful. I gathered more folks in support than almost anyone else. So that would be up there. The chance to go to Chad and witness the refugee situation for the folks fleeing Darfur with Unitarian Universalist Service Committee President Charlie Clements would also be high on my list. And I should mention our advocacy for comprehensive sexuality education, which has really been led by our Washington office staff. But I have been down every year on the Hill with the young adults who are trained each year to be advocates. What do you see as Unitarian Universalists' greatest opportunities for public witness in the next few years, and what obstacles could keep us from realizing these opportunities? I think the biggest challenge for us is to move away from an instant criticism, which has been what we've been doing for the last 8 years, and I think we need it to do that, into a way of being which recognizes that we're going to be at the decision-making table on a number of issues that are central to us. We have to develop some new skill sets, because instant criticism is not going to serve us well. Clearly, marriage equality is going to remain important. It's going to be battled at the state level for some time. We're going to want to be faithful in our advocacy there. Environmental justice is also critical, and we have a particular slant on it. Although we're certainly in favor of reducing global warming, we tend to look at the marginalized communities that are most dramatically impacted by our decisions, and I think that's an important perspective to bring to the public square. What do you see as Unitarian Universalism's healing message in the context of the current economic crisis? As more and more people are getting more and more anxious about the impact of the recession on their lives, I think our healing message remains the same, that we are all in this together, and that attempts to divide us one from another are to be resisted at all costs. Ours is fundamentally a message of inclusion, which recognizes the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and that each and every person is a blessing, or can be a blessing, if we stay in right relationship. Our goal is to create the beloved community where each and every human being is honored. In 2003, you urged Unitarian Universalists to find ways to engage with explicitly religious language again, provoking what people have called the language of reverence debate. Although you were urging UUs to find ways to speak about the more personal dimensions of their religious lives than the principles and purposes discussed, you were also urging people to get involved in the process of reviewing the principles and purposes. The Commission on Appraisal has now done that, and the General Assembly this summer will vote on its proposal to revise the principles and purposes. Does the proposed revision speak more deeply to you than the current one? The principles are a wonderful ethical framework, but they don't pretend to get to spiritual depth. My wish has always been that Unitarian Universalists will find more pathways that can get them below the neck. We tend to be very heady, and we need to marry that to a more emotional and spiritual way of being religious people. In terms of the purposes and principles, I always thought that what we needed most was a greater sense of mission rather than a revision of the principles themselves. And I had hoped that we would be moving toward a statement of purpose which is closer to a statement of our mission in the world. Have you noticed anything shifting in the worship style or in the religious experience of the hundreds of congregations that you've visited? Oh, absolutely. Worship is becoming more soul-satisfying in our congregations and less a purely intellectual experience. I see it in many ways. It's amazing how many congregations have taken up the habit of singing two or three hymns prior to worship to get people into that space. I think it's also true, and I've heard this from numerous colleagues, that my willingness to step out front on the language of reverence actually freed them to be more honest about their own spiritual lives with their congregations. It's almost as if it allowed some folks to come out of the closet. What have you found spiritually challenging about your role as president, and what have you found spiritually helpful? My personal spiritual practice is prayer, and it always includes an element of gratitude for the many, many blessings of my life. And I try to get from that gratitude to the sense of humility. I'm not always successful, but I try to get there. But sitting in this beautiful, huge office, one of the best offices in the city of Boston, with a staff of over 200, always raises the danger of arrogance. And so I've tried to be very mindful of that, I think with some success. The other spiritual challenge is that this is a very demanding job, and it would be very easy to make it a 24/7, 365-a-year commitment and lose any sense of personal boundaries. I've been so blessed by having my wife Maria with me, so I look forward to going home, and at the same time, she's traveled with me quite a bit. She loves the church, and she loves our faith, and so she actually believes I'm doing the right ministry. So it's been a real blessing. Your presidency has introduced or transformed a variety of services and programs to congregations. What programs and services are you most proud of? This could be a long list. The Tapestry of Faith curriculum, free online, is going to help redefine Unitarian Universalism for the next generation. Moving into the electronic age has been an important achievement. Our address of race and oppression has shifted dramatically. I would hold up the Building the World We Dream About curriculum, which tries to take congregations where they are and show them the next steps for them, rather than enforcing a single model. It's going to help us tremendously. Our enhanced advocacy and witness presence certainly needs to be mentioned. Our willingness to do national advertising to increase the visibility of our faith should be on the list, with a surprising number of congregations picking up the idea and doing their own more visible promotion. And the diversity of ministry initiative is critical. It's just really getting up to full steam, but it is beginning to feel like a tipping point might be in sight. Do you want to say more about the kind of tipping point that you see? Part of it is the bully pulpit, because I've made this very visible in my public speaking to Unitarian Universalists. Here are some facts. We now have 33 ministers of color serving our congregations, and there has been a steady increase up to that number. Second, all the ministers of color who receive fellowship are finding jobs in our congregations. Third, what I thought was probably a one-time bubble of 50 or so seminarians of color seems to be sustaining itself. It varies a little bit year to year, but we have another 40 ministers of color to be that are preparing to serve our faith. It's too early to call it a tipping point right now, where one of the problems is that although ministers of color have found jobs, the average length of ministry is considerably shorter. So one of the real objectives of the Diversity of Ministry Initiative is to create fully sustainable ministries for these ministers. You've taken on some fairly intense projects in your administration, reorganizing the social witness programs and shifting the way the UUA promotes anti-racism work, moving the UUA support for youth programs away from the denominational level back towards congregations, promoting Unitarian Universalism through regional and national marketing campaigns, and even engaging the two UU seminaries in a conversation about possibly merging. Did you know in advance how complex or contentious some of these would be? Yes, in most cases I did. The UUA president has to be willing to do what needs doing. If the president is not willing, then she or he is really ineffective as a leader of the community. I was blessed by not universal affection, but by very widespread appreciation and respect, so that I had some relational capital that I could use, and I felt free to use it. During your administration, the UUA experimented with a new approach to planting new congregations. Although one of the explicit goals for the initiative was to create new, large churches, the two congregations formed as part of the program, the Pathways Church in Southlake, Texas, and Wells Springs Congregation in Chester Springs, Pennsylvania, each have fewer than 100 members. What did the UUA learn in the process of this initiative, and what do you see as the future of the association's church-planting efforts? I said when I was elected that growth was a priority and that we were going to move into experimental mode to try some things that we haven't tried before. The decision to attempt a large church rapid start was one which had been recommended by a commission that had studied the issue here at the association and by the large church senior ministers, and it seemed to me that we should at least give it a try. The results were disappointing in the first start, for certain, and we learned a ton. The second start, the Wells Springs congregation, although it is still small now, is actually meeting all of its benchmarks. So I think some of the things we learned have actually paid off. One of the major things that we learned was that new congregations work best if they have the strong and very present support of a local, good-sized, healthy congregation. That's the case with Wells Springs. It was not the case with Pathways, which was basically set out to do its own thing pretty much on its own. I think the other thing that we learned is that despite large amounts of money, because we are so little known out in the world, it probably is unlikely that we'll be able to be as successful as the Baptists in planting large churches. They plant a large church, and thousands of people know what a Baptist looks like and acts like. We plant a church, and we still have to explain what Unitarian Universalism is. So our planting may take a little bit longer. There are some very exciting things happening now that we're supporting in terms of multi-site congregations. I'm thinking of Albuquerque and San Diego, which are up and running now. But again, these projects are tied into healthy, good-sized churches. So I expect that's more the way we'll be going. What do you see as the primary challenges facing your successor? Well, certainly, dealing with the economic realities. Although we were very successful in finishing up the Now Is the Time capital campaign, which I'll be announcing at General Assembly, the environment for major donor fundraising right now is, well, tough would not be an overstatement. The fundraising will be a central challenge. There are important initiatives that are underway that I hope will be enthusiastically continued. One would be finding a way to continue to increase our visibility, whether that means advertising or public relations. The Diversity of Ministry initiative is, in my judgment, an opportunity and a challenge that, if we blow it this time, may not come around again. And although we now have the New Imagination for Youth ministry, that needs to be implemented, and I frankly had hoped to be a little bit further along on that path. And then, finally, although we have experimented with a variety of ways to help grow Unitarian Universalism, we don't have the recipe right yet. What's next for you? What do you see after the UUA presidency? I've accepted the position of senior minister and advisor to the UU Urban Ministry here in Boston. It's part-time, which will leave me some time for writing and reflection, and I'm very much looking forward to it. It's a ministry that is near and dear to my heart. In terms of your broader question, you know, when I entered the ministry, I was called to the parish. I thought I would be a parish minister, and I've never had the opportunity. So that has a real pull for me. The center of gravity of our family is shifting quite radically to the West Coast. My son and his wife and my first grandson are in San Francisco. My daughter is planning to pursue a career, probably in nursing, and she plans to go out to San Francisco to take her nursing degree there. So I expect that there will be a move west for us. Christopher L. Walton, a graduate of Harvard Divinity School and a member of the Church of the Larger Fellowship, is editor of UU World. Visit uuworld.org for an expanded version of the interview, including President Sinkford's comments about the UUA's international relationships, the board's transition to policy governance, and the 2009 UUA presidential elections, as well as links to UU World coverage of many of the topics he discusses. The Liberal Saints. Andrine Kaufman's murals in Chicago's Third Unitarian Church honor heroes of the liberal spirit, by Donald E. Skinner. Photographs by David Boulanger. They are there every Sunday in the sanctuary of Third Unitarian Church in Chicago. Martin Luther King, Jr., Jane Addams, Joseph Priestley, Thomas Jefferson. Many Unitarian Universalist places of worship are adorned sparingly, having at most a quilt or a congregational banner on the wall. But Third Unitarian is rich in artwork. 24 Saints of Liberalism circle the sanctuary or greet people in vestibules and stairwells, their painted images gazing down on the gathered congregation. In 1956, Andrine Kaufman, a Third Unitarian member who was a muralist and longtime instructor at the Art Institute of Chicago, was inspired by a sermon to create the portraits. The sermon, by the Reverend E. T. Buhrer, minister at Third Unitarian from 1941 to 1969, was entitled The Saints of Liberalism. The sermon led Kaufman to paint 24 figures, many of them mentioned in the sermon. She finished the first one, of U.S. President Woodrow Wilson, in 1956. She made most of the rest of the series between 1957 and 1963. She added a final mural of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. in 1969, a year after he was killed. The figures, ranging from 20 inches to 6 feet tall, are painted on ceramic tiles and mounted on the brick walls of the sanctuary. The figures include the ancient sages Socrates, Jesus, Siddhartha Gautama, and Confucius. Roger Williams, the 17th century Baptist preacher and advocate of church-state separation. The 19th century Unitarian ministers William Ellery Channing, James Martineau, and Theodore Parker, and the 18th century scientist and Unitarian minister Joseph Priestley. Depicted alongside the Unitarians in one mural are two American patriots and free thinkers, Thomas Jefferson and Thomas Paine. Other murals honor U.S. Presidents Abraham Lincoln, who freed America's slaves, and Woodrow Wilson, who promoted the League of Nations. Kaufman dedicated murals to a variety of social justice leaders. Settlement House founder Jane Addams, the Progressive Era Governor of Illinois John Peter Altgeld, suffragist Susan B. Anthony, Mohandas Gandhi, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and the African-American abolitionist and suffragist Harriet Tubman. Kaufman also dedicated murals to writers Albert Camus, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, and Walt Whitman. Longtime church member Eleanor Lukashevsky, a member of the Women's Alliance, noted that not all the saints were Unitarian or Universalists, but all of them supported at least some Unitarian or Universalist beliefs. There are common threads of peace or justice-making, she said. At the close of the sermon that inspired Kaufman, Buhrer described the saints this way. Our saints come from every age, every nation and every race, black and red, brown and white. They are Catholic, Protestant, Hindu, Confucian, Buddhist, pagan, and Jew. They are not in the familiar Christian tradition. We do not think of them as intercessors in heaven with special access to a divine source of purity and truth. They are real men and women, fighting the battles of the world and leading the progress of mankind. Kaufman's portrait of Buhrer faces the main entrance of the church. Another mural not in the sanctuary is that of Walt Whitman, which hangs in a stairway to the second level of the sanctuary. Whitman didn't approve of organized religion, and so we didn't think we should put him in the sanctuary, said Lukashevsky. In 2008, a self-portrait of Kaufman was found in a closet at the church. The Women's Alliance had it framed and hung in a special ceremony as part of Third Unitarian's 140th anniversary. Other drawings by Kaufman were found at the same time, and some were sold to collectors. The Reverend Brian Covell, Third Unitarian's minister since 2003, said the murals add another dimension to worship. I find it inspiring and more than a little daunting to preach while surrounded by our saints, he said. They are inspiring due to the depth and range of philosophical insights that they represent. It's easy to think about Gautama and Goethe in symbolic, ongoing conversation with themselves and others. At the same time, Covell said, I'm challenged by the standards of eloquence, profundity, and ethical living set by the Reverend Buhrer's heroes. I suspect many in the congregation have reached similar conclusions. Ms. Kaufman's art adds, in my view, an understated level of adornment to our otherwise unadorned and uncluttered sanctuary. He added, while it's possible to see the pieces as dated, and some folks do, expressing concerns about a lack of gender balance, far more men than women, and low representation from a wide range of cultures, most of the comments I hear from guests and members alike are positive. He said more than one person has viewed the sanctuary and made a comparison to the figures in Catholic churches, gazing down from their niches. Lukashevsky said the congregation has tried but hasn't been able to learn much about Kaufman. She was apparently most active in the 1940s and 50s at Third Unitarian. After that, I think her health was not good, Lukashevsky said. Born in 1905, Kaufman served for 40 years as an instructor in drawing and painting at the Art Institute and was chair of the school's Division of Fine Arts for part of that time. She died in 1993. Kaufman created 30 other murals and 12 bas-reliefs for public buildings in the Midwest under the Depression-era Works Progress Administration Federal Art Project. Donald E. Skinner is a UU World contributing editor, a member of the Shawnee Mission Unitarian Universalist Church in Overland Park, Kansas. Skinner is also the editor of the UUA's Interconnections newsletter for congregational leaders, www.uua.org/interconnections. See more of the murals online at UU World's photo gallery, flickr.com/UUWorld. UU World is the magazine of the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations. This recording is made possible by the UUA Department of Communications and the UUA Accessibilities Office. I'm Dick Hill. I'm an audiobook narrator, and my website is www.dickhill.com.